Amen. We find ourselves this morning once again in Matthew chapter 5, and Jesus is delivering the Sermon on the Mount. And you will recall that 2 weeks ago, we began this exploration by looking at the Beatitudes. And those was a series of indicative statements in which Jesus told us that blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth, and blessed are the poor in spirit, and so on. And these statements were not to be understood in the imperative as things that we aspired for in the future, but as a statement of the current reality. These were the people that God was caring for. These were the people that really mattered. And hearing these statements, along with last week's readings, we could at least find a place for ourselves somewhere in the list, or somewhere in the general broad statements of what people were supposed to do. And if not, we at least had a hope that we could get right with God. But there wasn't anything directly threatening to us. And now the rubber hits the road. Today's reading begins a series of what are called antitheses. Jesus says, you've heard this, but this is what's going on. And before I get into these in any specificity, I want to offer a couple of observations. The first is that last week, Jesus had said point blank that he had come to fulfill the law and not to destroy it. Now, this shouldn't need to be said, but given the church's track record over the last 2,000 years, it sadly still needs to be said. Jesus was Jewish. Jesus was a Jew. All of those disciples, every last one of them, was a Jew. They weren't Congregationalists. They weren't Catholics. They weren't Methodists. They didn't go to the evangelical church on the other side of town. They all went to the synagogue. Remember that. Jesus had come to teach. In addition to healing and to saving, he came to teach the people, to offer a new interpretation of the law. The law that he still believed in, that he still felt applied. But he wanted people to focus on the heart of the law. What was driving those 613 commandments? And he had a concern, and that was that first century Judaism had become increasingly legalistic. Now, before we point any fingers at the first century Jews, we should remember that humans, not Jews, humans, all of us, like to make rules. On this President's Day weekend, we can reflect on how, during the time of George Washington and Abraham Lincoln and Franklin Roosevelt, the laws have grown. The Federal Register now is huge, and we have regulations that go around that, and administrative agencies. And some people today are concerned that all of these new laws and regulations and programs have taken us away from what defines our country. That kind of concern was what drove Jesus. He was worried that this focus on legalism, on crossing the T's and dotting the I's, checking off the boxes, following every regulation to the letter, was taking people away from what the law, the Torah, was meant to be. It was not meant to be some kind of exclusive regulatory system that would define and drive somebody's life throughout every single day. But it was meant to be a way of forming a life, providing some order in a world of chaos, of helping people grow closer to one another and to God. That is what drove Jesus as he preached. That is what drove Jesus as he taught. So what are we to make of today's lesson from Scripture? Frankly, as a preacher, I would have been very happy not to touch this text, because this isn't some kind of lovely, fuzzy text in which everybody's going to hear something that warms their heart and makes them feel good about what they do, and then they're going to skip out of the sanctuary and say, hey, you should go to that church because the preacher tells us good things. It's not that kind of text. Now, how we approach this text says something about whether we've been listening to Jesus. I am not going to tell you that you are all bad, because everybody here has in some way, I am sure, been angry with someone, has looked at someone in a lustful way. Many of you are divorced, and many of you have sworn oaths that you really haven't upheld. Well, you're all sinners, so am I, but we know that, right? But think about what Jesus is doing here, and he offers some pretty extreme examples for us to grapple with. Start with murder. Now, he says the law tells us that you shall not murder. Now, I'm going to assume that I'm not going to open up the Valley News tomorrow and find a story that somebody here had committed murder. I'm not worried about that. But did you notice what Jesus spent a lot of time on in this text? About our anger, about our words, about our passions, about our failure to reconcile with one another. And Jesus did not have access to social science studies and criminologists and all sorts of modern theories about why people do bad things. But Jesus knew that when we are angry, we can start taking a journey down a very dark path. And he believed that it was that anger that led to murder. Now, you may recall 10 commandments, thou shalt not kill. But all translation is an act of interpretation, and the Hebrew would be more accurately rendered, thou shalt not murder. There are instances where the Hebrew Bible is quite clear, it is acceptable to kill. But murder is a different thing. And we may not be driven to some kind of murderous state by our anger, but we can say things to people that are hurtful. And we can say things to people that ruin relationships, that split apart communities and families. Think about what's going on in the media today, and not just in politics, but it seems to be now the standard is, you know, how rude and ugly can I be in my speech? As Christians, as people who follow Jesus Christ, that is not the world we should want to live in. We have choices to make. And God has expectations of us. Another thing for President's Day, as I was thinking and meditating on Jesus' comment about lust in one's heart, most of us here are old enough to remember when Jimmy Carter ran for president in 1976. And I see some people nodding, and they know what I'm going to say. They remember that famous interview in Playboy magazine. And Carter had met with the reporters at Playboy because he and his campaign wanted to dispel the notion that he was some kind of strict and severe, no-fun Sunday school teacher. And the interview had gone pretty well, and it ended, the official interview had ended when this topic came up. And of course, it was what he then said, that he had lust in his heart at times, that dominated the headlines. And he'd blown his lead in the polls, and the election was much closer than anyone expected. What Carter said was informed directly by this morning's lesson from Matthew. Contrary to what some evangelical preachers said at the time, Carter was not misguided, and he was not heretical, and he was not a bad man. Carter knew his Bible. It doesn't matter whether you like Carter as president or dislike him, or you like him as a post-president, or you dislike that. Jimmy Carter's life was driven by his faith, and he was willing to engage in an introspection that most of us find to be really uncomfortable to engage in. So Jimmy Carter did something in a campaign that might not have been advisable. But he did something as a Christian that I think is commendable. Now, you remember a couple of years ago, I was on sabbatical and my family and I had the opportunity to go down to Atlanta, and we got to meet Jimmy Carter. And you don't meet Jimmy Carter without meeting Rosalynn Carter. They are a pair. And they have had a marriage that has lasted decades. And Carter said earlier in that interview that they've had crises a few times during their marriage, but they managed to work through them. Now, I look out at the sanctuary, and I see some couples here who have also been married for decades. And I'm sure you've had your ups and downs, and sometimes your disagreements. But there you are. You're still together. You look at the heart of the relationship, and not at the exterior. When we look at divorce, well, our modern society just says, sorry, Jesus, you're wrong. We've got a lot of people here who have been divorced and remarried, and it's great that you're in relationships that you find fulfilling and meaningful, and that's good. But what would drive Jesus, who was never married, to comment on this? Well, I could go off and give you a whole other sermon about, to use a technical term, how patriarchal the ancient world was. And how none of you parents here would want your daughter to have a biblical marriage. Because none of you would want to give your daughter away as chattel. The system was rigged. It was stacked against women. And Jesus had a different vision of how things should work in our world. Of a covenant, of an agreement between people. And one of the things that worried him was that if people were going to break this covenant of marriage, they might also break the covenant they have with God. And to Jesus, the most important relationship we have is the one we have with God. And it's so important for us to value that. So as we look at these antitheses, I would invite us to do something that the author John Pritchard suggested, which is not to focus on the murder and the lust and the divorce and the making of oaths, but what in our own life seems to have some kind of disconnect that we need to address? With whom do we need to reconcile? What behavior do we need to change? This stuff is not always easy for us to do. But the life of faith is not always easy for us to live. And while it is true that ours is a God of love and a God of grace and a God who's forgiven us, and we can't do anything to earn his mercy, that doesn't mean that we can just go off and sin willy-nilly. God has expectations for us. God has hopes for us. Anybody who here is a parent knows what it's like to explain to a child why they should not do something. And the reaction of our kids ranges somewhere between, okay, to you've lost your mind. You don't know what you're talking about. But we don't do this because we want to be hard cases. Because we have some desire to be a tyrant, and kids are the only ones around for us to bully. We do this because we know there are things kids have to learn if they're going to grow up and be functioning and healthy and happy adults. Because we have hopes and expectations for them. Now, sometimes that means cutting them some slack and giving them some running room. And that's what God has done with us. God has told us there are some things we need to do. There are some behaviors we need to follow. But God has given us free will, and we get to choose. You'll remember that the Sermon on the Mount, there was a huge crowd listening to Jesus. They were really interested in what he had to say. But you'll remember that at the end of the gospel, that crowd had winnowed down to just a handful of people. And then they got all excited again on Palm Sunday, and they showed up for his entry into Jerusalem, but then they melted away again. My hope, my prayer, is that we will listen to Jesus, even when it makes us uncomfortable, even when it is hard. That we won't be part of the crowds who only want to stay for the easy sayings, for the affirming teachings, but that we will listen to everything he has to say to us. And we will give thanks that we are part of a community in which we can struggle to make ourselves better, to make ourselves wholer, to make ourselves people who grow closer to one another and to the God who made us.